Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the 1950s, Dr. Dorian Paskowitz changed his life. He dropped his medical practice, headed for the beach, and began to surf a lot. He married his third wife, had 9 children in 10 years, and raised them all as nomads in a 24-foot camper. No school, nothing normal, really. Just surfing day after day on the beaches of California, Hawaii, and Mexico. His children, Salvador and Nava, remember it like this in the new documentary, Surfwise.
Your parents said, you can go to school because it's safe, but don't go swimming with sharks because it's dangerous. Our parents said, you can go swimming with sharks, but you're not going to school because that is dangerous.
Nobody would ever believe the experiences my brothers and I had together. I wouldn't change that for anything in the world.
This hour on Point, the new documentary Surfwise and the story of the Paskowitz family raised way off the grid. We are scheduled to speak in this hour to 2 of those 9 children, Jonathan Paskowitz and Moses Paskowitz. With us right now from Los Angeles is the documentary's director, Doug Prey. He's a documentary filmmaker. He's made films about American subcultures like Hype about the Seattle rock music scene and Scratch about hip-hop DJs. His film Infamy looked at vandals and graffiti and Big Rig at long-haul truckers. Doug Prey, thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Tom.
We should have Jonathan in a second, but tell us what turned your head about this family. I mean, it takes about 2 seconds into the film to see that it's a family like maybe no other, but how did you know about the Paskowitzes and get into their incredible tale?
It's interesting. They're actually pretty well known in Southern California because they have a world-famous surf camp, the Paskowitz Surf Camp. Yeah. So a lot of people, surprisingly, a lot of people know them or have heard of them or have met one of the brothers or sister at some point. But I never had heard of them. And I was approached by a producer who just said, do you know the Paskowitz family? We got to do this documentary. And he introduced me to Jonathan Paskowitz, and the rest was history. Because from that moment forward, I began getting very interested in this family.
Give us just a sense. I mean, this is really sort of out of all boxes, out of all rules. There were literally 9 kids plus the parents in a 24-foot camper, the kind that, where the living space folds up over the cab of the truck, and they're all in there, beholden to nobody's rule book except their father's, Dorian Paskowitz.
He's a very strong and strict and very loving father who wanted his kids around him, literally like a pack of wolves, as Nava, the one sister, says, you know, like puppies. He raised us like puppies. We were all together. And but he also, his whole mission was health. He was really into this idea of total health, and that's why he wanted them out of society, and he wanted them not eating the foods that the rest of America was eating. And he was really, he was kind of ahead of his time in terms of just a lot of like the healthy eating that we're always talking about these days. But he made them eat essentially what wild animals would eat. And I mean,
birdseed and twigs for breakfast, one of the boys said.
That's right. Yeah, some of them complain about it, but a lot of them look back and say, you know, it was actually really groundbreaking. I mean, he fed them just healthy food and very little of it.
In the arc of the film, it starts off incredibly bold, kind of radical, and very exciting. The portrayal gets much more ambivalent as it goes on. This is not a fully easy, paradise story, but it sure looked enviable, a kind of a Peter Pan escape to people who sort of peeked in at the Paskowitz life in those years. And you've got a lot of film from television and, I don't know, maybe home movies. Here's several of the kids talking about how other kids looked at their lifestyle growing up, 9 kids in a 24-foot camper being raised in the surf at the beach. Here are the voices of Nava, Izzy, Israel, and David.
I've never met a kid that, when we were kids anyway, who didn't think, God, what I would have given to have your lifestyle, you know, because it just seemed like we were constantly on vacation. I mean, there was never like sit and do geometry. We were always doing something exciting.
When most kids turn into teens and have to grow up, we never had to do that.
It was infectious. In fact, a lot of kids essentially ran away from their own homes to come down every day and roll in the dirt with us. and people living in big, beautiful, rich homes would get in their, you know, brand new Subarus, drive down to the beach and roll with me. I need love. They saw their escape route. They're like, I know I can tap into this. They don't own this. I can still keep my job. I can still send the alimony to my ex-wife and everything's gonna be cool, but I'm gonna tap into whatever these pasquistas are doing because I want that. You can't. There's no halfway.
Nava, Izzy, and David Paskowitz there from the new documentary Surfwise about their life way, way off the grid, you might say. Paradise, some moments. Other moments, not so. Did you manage to round them all up, Doug Prey? And what did it take to do that? This is like, it is kind of like herding cats with the Paskowitz crew.
You beat me to the metaphor. Yeah. It was definitely like herding cats. Actually, more like wild, whatever. Lions, mountain lions. Yeah, no, it's amazing. Just the whole journey of making the film is incredible. Sometimes I feel like the 10th Paskowitz because it's been a 5 or 6 year long journey just making a documentary. They all kind of seem to take this long, but this one there was just so many characters and they all had different stories, and it was interesting to be able to interview them at this age because they're able to look back on the whole experience with a bit of wisdom and also with a bit of I guess more objectivity and, you know, able to say, you know, this part of that experience was horrible and this part of that experience was total bliss. And that's kind of what the movie is about, is what's the price you pay if, you know, if a guy follows his dreams and lives by a strict set of ideals, what's the price you pay? And is it a great thing anyway that he did it?
You can't really understand the family or the film without understanding something more about the Dorian Paskowitz, the father, Doc Paskowitz, he's called. Introduce him to us, if you would, Doug, and the background he came out of and the philosophy of life that he sort of created Kerouac-like on the road.
Certainly one of the most interesting characters I've ever interviewed, probably the most difficult. He's a very extreme man. He's very inspired and very driven. He was born in Texas, and he moved to San Diego when he was, I think, 11 or 12 and became a surfer. He was one of the original groups. I mean, he was in that original wave of surfers in the 30s in Southern California, really, truly one of the pioneers of California surfing. But then he went into medical school. He wanted to become a doctor, and he graduated from Stanford Medical School, and he went off to Hawaii, which wasn't even a state yet, but basically started leading a very, very successful medical career. He had two wives, both which ended in divorce and really devastated him. And he sort of came to this point in life where he just had one of those, I guess, midlife crisis, definite crisis. But he completely dropped everything. He went to Israel for a year and kind of found himself. And in doing so, by the way, he introduced surfing to Israel, which is just an interesting thing. He was the first person ever to surf in the Mediterranean there and kind of started this whole little surf craze
Famous for that in itself. Let's listen just a little bit to Doc Paskowitz. A Village Voice calls your documentary, it says it's a mesmerizingly ambivalent documentary about an itinerant family of Jewish surfer dude health nuts. Here's the paterfamilias, Doc Paskowitz, now in his 80s, still promoting his philosophy of clean surfing, clean living, exercises each morning naked in the film Sunrise, and while he does it, talking here about maintaining his vitality.
I don't take any medicines, none at all. Instead, I'm trying to shift the things that I do to be extra moderate. In other words, I try to be as healthy as possible. And there is the key. Health. More than the mere absence of disease, it's the presence of a superior state of well-being, a pizzazz, a vitality that has to be worked for each and every day of your life. You cannot get it in a bottle or from Dr. Phil. It's got to be gotten through diet and exercise and rest and recreation and attitudes of mind working all together every day of your life. And then for young men can become supermen, and old men can become older.
Doc Paskowitz from the documentary Surfwise. How did you end up feeling about this guy, Doug? His children clearly very ambivalent on many fronts. Did you see him as cosmic, crazy, a model for yourself? Are you running the other way? What?
No, in terms of what he just said right there, what he just laid out as his principles of health, I completely agree with.
Who wouldn't want a superior state of well-being?
Exactly.
Pizzazz.
And he talks about, you know, getting beyond health, like beyond just this idea of like, oh, are you not sick? I mean, taking that way beyond so that every day you're exercising and eating a lot less and eating healthy foods and resting. And, you know, in this case for the family, that meant surfing every day was their recreation and their exercise. And, you know, it was a dream. I mean, I think there's a very, very positive side of Doc Paskowitz's message. The film explores, you know, sort of like some of the negative aspects of homeschooling and the way that family was sort of kept in the camper for all those years and how they all sort of on their own rebelled. So that's why it's sort of, that's where the ambivalence comes in.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the story of a family raised way off the grid, the story of Doc Paskowitz and his 9 children, never sent to school, living in a 20-foot camper, raised surfing on the beaches of California, Mexico, and Hawaii. Their story is told in the new documentary, Surfwise. You can join the conversation. Have you fantasized about making your own way, your own life, off the grid for yourself and your family? How much marching to your own drummer is a gift to your kids? How much is too much, even harmful? Can you picture raising 9 kids in a 24-foot camper, not in school, on the beach, penniless very often, and surfing every day? Is that paradise or something else? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Director Doug Prey, director of Surfwise, is with us. He also directed Hype, Scratch, Infamy, Big Rig. We'll be joined in a moment by Moses Paskowitz, and we're hoping to hear from Jonathan Paskowitz as well, but let's hear a little more from the film. Here's David, number one son in the clan, reflecting on why his father, Dorian Paskowitz, chose to live the way he did.
My dad was beaten down so hard by his previous life of trying to be a real doctor, a real person, that he really decided that the world outside of the core family was basically something to be very, very careful of, kind of in an Amish sort of way.
They were always on the move, Dorian Paskowitz and Juliet Paskowitz, his third wife, Mexican, who he met in his 30s when he decided to change everything. They didn't send the kids to school. Instead, their kids got their education on the road.
As we traveled, we taught them about other cultures, the way other people live, the different foods. And we would read for hours, just quietly reading.
I wasn't some kind of avant-garde, radical intellectual. I just wanted my kids around me, surfing with me, and education be damned.
Not avant-garde? I'm not so sure. Here's Nava, the only daughter out of 9 children, recalling living and sleeping in the family's 24-foot camper.
See, we never had a rig like this. Our rig was half that size. That's a perfect example of a rig we never had.
For us, we were just like puppies. There'd be like 3 or 4 people on that little lower bed thing, and then there'd be a couple guys on the side couch beds or whatever, and there'd be at least 2 or 3 on the floor. Mom and Dad would be up above. Either I was on this weird board thing they made at their feet, or Joshy, which definitely scarred me sexually, because my mom and Dad would do it every night.
Nava Paskowitz there, along with Juliet Paskowitz, Dorian Paskowitz, and there's much more to hear. Director Doug Prey, director of Surfwise, is with us, and right now, joining us from Long Beach, California, Moses Paskowitz as well, born in 1964, 5th son in the family. Moses, thanks very much for joining us.
Aloha, Tom. How is everything?
Well, everything's pretty good. We've seen the documentary, so I've got a sense of what a remarkable, you know, there are not many things you can say one of a kind, but I have a feeling your upbringing was one of a kind. How do you convey to people who are hearing your story for the first time, Moses, what that youth was like, what that culture that your mom and dad created was like to live in?
Well, I think the first thing that people have to realize, Tom, is that, you know, Dorian and Juliet absolutely adored and loved one another. And to them, being together at all times with their children was the most important thing for them. And growing up in a camper and seeing different societies in different parts of the world and our country kind of was our own schooling system. Even though we didn't go to your standardized American school system, we had our own, you know, Dorian had his own school system, and that was nature and living life on the road. And we did have a few homes here and there, but it always ended up that we were always back in the camper and on the road traveling somewhere.
What was it like day in and day out, Moses, with 9 plus 2, 11 people in that camper? That is not big. I mean, how did you physically even do it?
Yeah, it was very tidy. We figured out everyone had one cubic foot for their own personal effects.
Wow.
And it was tight. You know, it was like living in a mobile submarine, Tom. But, you know, once you only know the camper and what's inside of it, once you go outside, you have the whole world, you know, a bountiful for you. So it's not like we were trapped in like medical rats. We'd pull over to somewhere, or we'd be in Cabo or any part of the world, and open the door, and there we are. And you have a whole new world and exciting things in front of you to go explore.
And when you opened that door, your father had almost always arranged for there to be some great surf right outside.
Yeah.
Describe the central role of surfing in the life of these 9 kids, the 11-person family.
Well, I think surfing is what really saved Dorian's life. What Doug was talking about, when Dorian was a young man in Galveston, Texas, his asthma was so bad, and living in the oil areas of Texas really, really affected him. And he showed his mother a picture of a gentleman riding the sea in San Diego. And he said to her, "Mommy, if you take me here, I'll get better." So surfing was not only a natural way for him to feel better, but it just encapsulated his whole life.
Doug Prey, this family was kind of at the head of that wave of surfing rising in popularity, trophy after trophy, championship after championship, national and world and you name it. Surfing defined their public accomplishments in those years.
They're all great surfers, and some of them definitely reached international acclaim, but they're all amazing surfers. And it's interesting, though, they're not, you know, a lot of people think that they are very, that they kind of define what you'd call modern surfing culture, but I really feel like, in a way, they represent kind of the earlier period of surfing, which was much more about kind of almost a loving approach to the sport. You know, it wasn't like this like trendy, you know, brands and like, you know, I don't know, the kind of beating people up on the beach and all these things you get from movies nowadays about the surfing world. The Paskowitz family, to me, represents the ultimate kind of original concept of surfing, which is it's a beautiful thing. It's not about the size of the waves. It's about this love of being out in the water. And I'm not really a surfer, but I definitely understand the feeling you get when you're in the ocean and you come out. It's sort of a rejuvenating thing, and that's just true the world over. And the Paskowitz family, that kind of was their whole thing. It's like, get in the water and life is going to be okay.
Moses, there's a moment in the documentary when you've been down literally to your last dime. Your father puts it on the table very excitedly, points to it and says, "That's our last dime." And in a way, he's kind of thrilled about it. And then one of your brothers, I don't recall which one, says afterward that, you know, he had, a birthday, and his birthday present was, your dad took him and said, "Well, son, I give you the sea. Give you the sea." And I forget which brother, but he was, again, the ambivalence came in. He was a little ambivalent. Great to be given the sea by your father, but, you know, what are you going to do with that as a birthday present exactly?
Yeah, that's what Joshua had to say. You know, Dorian, you know, when we were in places that were so rural and there wasn't your local store to buy your child a toy, you know, to him, Dorian would say, "Son, I give you the sea." And Joshua says it so beautifully and so eloquently that you kind of feel for him like, oh, my God, this poor kid. You know, where's his toys? Where's the stuff that, you know, normal, regular kids get? But Dorian wanted us to realize that the thing that he was giving us is the ocean and everything that it can give to you back,
mm-hmm.
and the love. And like Doug says, Dorian's the most important thing that Dorian taught us is the love and the aloha of surfing. You know, I saw a bumper sticker a few days ago that says, "Don't try surfing, it sucks." And to me, that's awful, because everyone should have the ability to go to the ocean. If they want to surf, surf. That's the whole idea that Dorian wanted to teach us, surf with aloha. Everyone should be able to surf. Everyone should have a beautiful time doing it. And some people, it's ethereal where they get to like the whoa dude thing from
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But the other thing, it's very, very for exercise factor, the cardiovascular exercise that you can get from surfing, you can't find in anything else.
But there is a moment in this family story, and you convey it in the film where you're all in Mexico, have been down there in the camper, and surfing, Moses, almost kills you. Describe that for us.
Yeah, I was in 1974, August 3rd. I had a major surfing accident where I had a surfboard fin basically cut my colon in half, and we're in 181 kilometers down to Mexico.
Yeah.
And it literally almost killed me. By the time I finally got into the emergency room, it was probably 5 hours later. And the last thing I remember seeing is the defib, the paddles. And I just looked at my mom and I said, well, Mom, I guess this is it. And for a nine-year-old kid, you know, it's pretty, pretty, you know, amazing. And then I woke up and I had every tube and orifice, you know, connected to beeping machines.
And a colostomy bag for a year. It must have given you some kind of second thoughts about the wonder
of
surfing.
Oh, yeah. Like I said in the film, I swore never to surf again because it was such a blow to the whole idea of what surfing meant to me and my family, that how could I, you know, done this on Tom, on a wave no more taller than your knee. It took me out of mobility, took me out of the surfing world, and I remember my dad said, son, if you survive, I'll get you anything you want.
Near death in the sacred surf. We have a lot of listeners who want to join you, Moses and Doug. Let's go to Chris, calling from Block Island, Rhode Island. Hi, Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you know?
Good. I just wanted to say, you know, those guys, when I was a kid, I grew up in San Diego, and I surfed in La Jolla Shores, and I used to run into the Paskowitz clan, and they were unbelievable. They I have to say, they influenced the way that I looked at surfing, and it's been a lifestyle for me. For the, you know, at 49, I'm still surfing.
What was their reputation, the message that you picked up, Chris?
They were like a tribe that would show up. You know, they'd show up in this beat-up old motorhome, and there were surfboards strapped all over it, and they kind of camped out right at the shores, right in the parking lot. And they were great. You know, the old man was amazing, and I didn't, you know, I was young, so I didn't really, you know, I didn't really interact with them only on a peripheral way because I was down there as one of the locals surfing, and but I was just always really impressed with the whole idea that they generated.
Did you dream of running away and joining the Paskowitz circus in a way?
Absolutely. I ended up running away and doing my own thing, you know, on boats and surfing and fishing. And I have to say, they totally influenced my ideas around life and the way people can live.
There it is, the imprint right there from Block Island. Let's get another here. Thanks, Chris. Let's go to Larry in Bennington, Vermont. Hi, Larry, you're on the air.
How are you doing, Tom?
Very well.
I just want to say hi to Moses. I worked with him about 10 years ago. He used to drive me around in a truck in the streets of Hollywood when we worked together on movies. And I just, you know, this guy was just an incredible presence and just like had this way to attract people. And I'm wondering how, with a family of nine kids all fighting for attention, how did he get that ability to do that? I mean, where did that come from? He must have really had a fight to get that attention, or just is that something everybody in your family has? And I'm glad you're doing well, Moses.
Moses, how about it? That equanimity that you've got. We've seen the film. Not everybody has it. Some have come out, I would say, scarred out of those years, even with the great stories. What about the balance you've found?
Well, you know, first of all, thank you very much, Larry. And the balance that I found is, you know, there's so many of us, and each one of us, like David says, is kind of like a little movie star in its own. And I think because of the fact that really Juliet, my mom, who people kind of overlook and don't understand, that was such a tremendous star of her own at such a young age, I think a lot of our panache and our airs about us come from our mother, and people don't realize that. And you know, and Dorian probably didn't give me the smarts, but gave some of my brothers some really great intellectual presence about them. And I think the combination of those two we weren't really, there was no problem with us talking to strangers at any time.
Because they're very uninhibited.
To say the least. I mean, everything goes here. Nothing is
off. But I mean that as a compliment. I mean, just as a director working with these individuals, I mean, I've never had interviews where people are so candid and just so – it's as if the way they grew up made them – they don't have all of society's little filters and fears. It's just – they're just – they're what they are. And that's what – when Larry called in, I completely understood what he was saying. That's the same way I felt in their presence.
Let's listen to a little bit of that incredibly direct. And here, Salvador, Abe, and Josh talking about how – well, it wasn't always, peace and love in that circle of 9 or 11.
When you have no sense of boundaries with your brothers and your sister, it made some brothers cope better with what they had to cope with by teasing.
It was so competitive. David, Jonathan, and Israel, almost in the same division growing up and absolutely at each other's throats. All they wanted to do was compete.
Like crabs in a bucket that see the other brother's success as their failure no matter what.
Kids in a camper, maybe crabs in a bucket sometimes. Let's go to Fred calling from Boston. Hi, Fred. You're on the air. What do you hear, Fred?
Hi, Fred. Hi. Good to be with you.
Hi, yeah.
I hear a story of, and I hope that I'm wrong, of denial and neglect and a narcissistic father who dominated their lives and kept them in a prison of the world.
Denial, neglect, and narcissism. Moses,
Fred,
what do you say?
Fred, you know what? I definitely disagree with you, but everyone has their opinion. And, you know, Dorian did not neglect us in any way. Dorian did not say, hey, I have a medical practice for the next 3 weeks, so I won't be able to see guys. I mean, Dorian raised us in a fashion that he felt was the best thing for his family, that he might have done some things that were wrong, but, you know, like any mother or father, they do the best that they can for the children with love and caring. You cannot try to say to him, hey, you know, you made a mistake, because there's no going back. And what Dorian did for us is he tried his best to teach one of us and each one of us that love one another and take care of one another. Always remember the Pasquitz power.
Mm. But at the same time, one of your brothers talks in the film Surfwise about how beaten down your mom, Juliet, got at certain points. It was so hard, talking about your father being, you know, they say he was a dictator, he was Fidel, talking about his temper, his anger, when the Paskowitz, you know, power vibe wasn't working out the way he wished.
Well, you know what? You imagine, like you keep saying, 9 children in a 24-foot camper.
Well,
My mother bore 9 children, okay?
Yes.
She had to breastfeed every single child. She had children all the way around her. You know, it was a very difficult life, and some brothers it did affect a little more, you know, negatively, and some it didn't. You know, you have so many children living in cramped quarters that you cannot come out and have the perfect child every single time. But none of my brothers or sister, none of them became heroin addicts. None of them went to prison. I mean, granted, they're not, you know, heads of state or major corporation, but they all in whole seem to be pretty darn good people.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the story of a family raised way off the grid, subject of a new documentary called Surfwise. It's the story of Dorian Doc Paskowitz and his 9 children, never sent to school, living in a 24-foot camper, raised surfing on the beaches of California, Mexico, and Hawaii. Doug Prey is with us. He's director of Surfwise. Moses Paskowitz, 5th of 9 children, is with us as well. He will be joined in a moment by Jonathan Paskowitz, too, but let's get a couple calls. Polly in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Polly, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say what Moses is talking about with his mom. I have to echo what he's said about her strength and her intelligence and her love for her children. I have 5 children myself, and I live in a small home, although not quite the shoe that the old woman lived in.
Right. And not quite a camper with 9 kids in it.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
anyway, I just, listening to him talk brought to mind one of my favorite quotes, and I think of it a lot in my parenting. And Anne Bradstreet said, that diverse children have their different natures. Some are like flesh, and nothing but salt will keep them from putrefaction. Others, again, are like tender fruits best preserved with sugar. And those parents are wise that can fit their nature, nurture according to their nature. And it sounds like his parents really tried to be smart about knowing their children and not doing, you know, the same thing in their relationships with them.
Polly, we've got it, though. If you needed sugar, you would have been out of luck in this family because refined sugar was off the table. We've got more mothers calling, but we take your mother of five, a salute to the mother of nine. I've seen the film, and Juliet, definitely strong, definitely beautiful. We'll ask the kids about the differentiation, but let's get one more mom first. Petal in Melrose, Massachusetts. Petal, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, you know, having just had a child myself and having had to breastfeed, I am very suspicious about the power this mother had in this relationship. I mean, I heard you mention that she was a Mexican immigrant. I'm really just trying to figure out, I mean, I'm hearing lots about the father and the kids and how they developed, and she seems conspicuously absent. I mean, we've been bringing her up, but she seems kind of absent. And I'm really wondering, is there a kind of an ugly reality to what life was like for this woman having sex in front of, you know, with eight boys in the house every night? I'm just trying to picture this, and I just can't see her being very powerful here.
Let's pick it up. We'll take it straight to the kids. She is a significant presence in this family, obviously, and in the film, though her husband, Doc Paskowitz, is kind of an overwhelming presence. We've got Moses Paskowitz, son number five, with us. I hope I've got son number two, Jonathan, here as well. Now, Jonathan, are you there?
Yes, Tom, I am.
Thanks very much for being with us. You just heard Petal calling in and saying, you know, it's hard to imagine that your mom didn't just get kind of run over by all these kids and this very strong-willed father. How do you see that, Jonathan?
Well, I heard her statement, and I can understand if somebody came from life so that this seems absolutely aberrant from their existence. But I assure you, my mother reveled in her motherhood and just cherished all the moments of breastfeeding. If she was here right now, she would say the greatest moments in her life, the greatest times in her life were when she was surrounded by lots of little kids and she was being a mother. I think that was probably her greatest ambition, and certainly was fulfilled. I mean, she, like she said, you know, when Dorian suggested that she is the mother of his seven children, she was immediately overjoyed and said directly to him, "No, good. My mother had nine children."
That's when they first met in Mexico, and he walked up to her in a bar or wherever it was and says, "You're going to be the mother of my seven sons." It turned out to be more than that.
They were in Catalina, and if you ever get an opportunity to speak with my mom, Tom, you'll find out that she, believe me, was not run over. She was, if anything, she was utterly satisfied as a woman and as a human mother. I think she did all the things she always dreamt of doing and really spent some amazing time with us. And I think that's not exactly her scenario at all.
It's clear she ran with the dream. Moses, let's put a couple of things on the table here. First of all, in your family, in the documentary, sexuality was very front and center. Your dad, part of his awakening in his 30s was a kind of sexual awakening. He was not the least bit shy in talking about that. How did that work out for the family? How did that work out for your mom?
Well, you know, Tom, what Dorian wanted to try to convey, I think, in the film is that the natural aspect of moving life forward and creating life through sexuality and making love was such a natural instinct that it should not be hidden and closed behind doors and be a taboo. He wanted us to feel like this is what mommies and daddies do. This is how we make each other. This is how you make babies. And it wasn't something that was vile and obscene and stuff like that. I mean, they would never have. I don't want the audience to feel like, well, hey guys, let's all line up because you're going to watch mommy and daddy have sex with one another It was never like that. It was more like my Dorian says, it's being in the tent with the Indians or the Mongols. And the mom and dad, you live in a small, closed environment, and that's what they do.
But Doug Pray, you've captured on film, we heard Nava saying she's sexually scarred by being at the foot of that bed, and Salvador sort of humorously saying he had his sort of crazy way of dealing with it when they would have their time, how he'd close his ear and flip his eye back and look this way. I mean, it was part of the scene, but it was also something to deal with for the kids.
Pretty highly controversial. And people who see the film, I mean, you know, there's definitely different responses. There's people who feel like some of the callers have stated, you know, that like, wow, this guy was so extreme and how selfish of him to just kind of pursue his single-minded ideals and, you know, whatever the kids, the heck with them. It's very complicated and complex to figure it out, but you have to look at it in the way of, and I'm not justifying it either. I'm ambivalent myself in the movie. Continues along that way, but Dorian felt like, you know, it really, you have to almost look back to Aboriginal times and kind of see that to him that is normal, like a family of nine clustered together, that's normal, you know, like Moses said, you know, parents making love in a small tent. I mean, that if you go to Pakistan, you still, you know, you go to
Mongolia,
two room houses, and there's, you know, there's like 15 people living there, and you know, that's how he sees as normal, and he gets really upset if you say, God, that's so weird, you're so weird. And then he'll just be like, what do you mean weird? All of our culture is weird, and that's what our original, that's how we're supposed to be. Now, whether you agree with that or not, that becomes a personal moral thing. And, you know, there definitely was a lot of issues, and the kids, you know, they're very candid about their feelings, and not all of them feel the same way about that experience alone. You know, some of the younger kids may have had it more, like Nava and Sal. They may have had more exposure, and it honestly did kind of bother them.
Ella Taylor in the Village Voice writes, whether you call this a Rousseauian paradise or capturing the Freedmans by the sea will depend on where you stand on hippie living up to a point. Jonathan Paskowitz, how about Judaism in your family? It was very important to your father. It was part of your weekly ritual. At least describe the role that played.
Well, I was bar mitzvahed. All of us went through our whole process of confirmation, and we were all, you know, celebrated the Sabbath and all the major Jewish holidays. I loved my father's direction on religion. You know, my mother let us celebrate Christmas and other Christian holidays. As far as religion goes, I believed what my father believed. You know, well, when I was a child, certainly. You know, I have a more, I think, universal perspective of religion now. But as far as I'm concerned, I thought that was a wonderful part of our lives, and I was proud to light our Sabbath candles on the beach in board shorts and a yarmulke on my head, sitting on the sand, and having my friends go, you know, what's that? What are you guys doing? You know, that's weird. You know, we were already odd, so being overt with our religion was nice. And also, you know, there aren't a lot of surfing Jews, so I mean, I was proud to be one of the.
And not just one, but what, U.S. longboard champion in 1985. Moses Paskowitz, yeah. There's a point in the film where your father anguishes that during World War II, when he says, I was at the height of my powers, looking back, saying, and I did nothing as the Holocaust was going on. Do you see this life and his health fixation in a way as an effort at compensation or some response to that?
Well, Dorian is a devout Jew. He says to fill in morning and night.
Mm-hmm.
And the tragedies that happened in World War II with the Nazis and the Jews is such a tremendous weight on his soul that at that point what he's trying to convey is that at his height of his strength and the pinnacle of his success, there was not a damn thing he could do to save this woman and child. And to him, every single day he thinks about, how do I go back? What do I do now for the people that are survivors from the Holocaust? How do I help them? When I had an opportunity to help them, I couldn't, but now I might have an opportunity, and he will, and he's going to do that. And that's his whole mantra of life is, how can I now not make the same mistake I did for that woman and child who he couldn't do anything, and now he can do something. And that scene to me, every time I see that with my three sons, it just brings me to tears. It's just, it's so, so difficult to look at that part of the picture.
Yeah, something, the tragedy behind things here, something beautiful in his effort to compensate, and then this ambivalence comes back again. There's a moment in the documentary Surfwise where your sister, the only girl in the family, describes her frustration and her siblings, your maybe some of yours, at some aspects of this lifestyle. It could look like paradise, but never in school. Here's what she has to say.
You know, my dad always loves to show off the fact that he's a Stanford graduate, and it's like, what the heck kind of Stanford graduate, what the heck kind of Jew would say, I'm not sending my kids to school? I mean, I think that was completely unfair. If you were going to keep us in the camper for the rest of our lives, then that was okay. But you can't keep us uneducated and then send us off into the world and expect that there's not going to be some serious problems, you know?
Let's take a call from Don in North Andover, Massachusetts. Don, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I grew up in Southern California. I knew of this family. I used to see them periodically on the beaches. And I just wanted to give the perspective of someone who forced that lifestyle and moved east. I sort of did it with a vengeance. I came east to become a professor at Harvard. And, mm-hmm. and my kids have grown up out here in they are they lead such a different existence from the one that's described in the film and that I can recall leading traces of, and my view is that they're definitely missing something. They've enjoyed a privileged upbringing, but the sort of life force of the ocean and of surfing that I grew up with is something that's missing from their lives, and I think they're the worse off for it. So I don't have a question so much as that remark.
Don, we appreciate that. I want to give Doc Paskowitz, the father, a word here. Many things beautiful about this life, but late in the film he talks about some of his regrets as well, looking back over that life on his parenting, how he equipped or didn't equip his kids for the life ahead.
In many times in my life with my kids, I was far too serious, far too radical, far too tight-fisted. But that's just a way of saying I wasn't the man that I should have been. Because a real man, like a real woman, is capable of controlling himself before he controls his children. Did I give them the actual tools that, in a way, invent opportunity? No, I did not.
Jonathan Paskowitz, your father was such a self-confident man. What's it like for you to look at that bit of film where he's voicing his doubts?
Well, that's a hard thing to listen to because, I always saw our upbringing and the skills that I learned as all that I ever needed in life. And more so than the average person, not less so than the average person. What Dad taught me in the way of wisdom and social interaction was amazing. But my academic schooling and my ability to do math might have been waning. But I had so many wonderful opportunities to do things that kids never get to do, that adults never get to do, the adventure, the travel, I don't feel that, personally, I don't feel that statement has much validity in my life. I feel he did give me all the tools necessary. I personally feel like we had an absolutely blessed childhood and that I would never have changed it or have added or subtracted anything from my youth personally.
Moses, we've just got half a minute here. Have you or have any of the kids tried to emulate your dad's lifestyle with you with your own lives, your own families?
Well, my brother Adam lives in an Airstream in my front yard in my driveway, and he's trying to do that for his son. His wife Tracy and their only son Doc, he wants to follow that dream. His dream is to go and travel the world and be on a slow rolling diesel, you know, shrimp boat, and live his life that way. You know, Doc did the best what he felt he could do. We all can't go through our lives and say, I'm going to do everything exactly the way I want it. Mm. And it turns out the way it is. Mm. You know, the professor from Harvard, you know, this is what he wanted to do for us, you know. And he can't say, I have regrets of it.
He did it in a big way. Everybody has their dark night of thinking back at the same time. Moses Paskowitz and Jonathan Paskowitz, you lived it. We thank you for being with us today. And Doug
thank
Prey,
you,
yeah, you're very welcome. Doug Prey, director of the new documentary Surfwise. It's terrific. Doug, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks, Tom. It's been great.
It's headed into the theaters. Check it out. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.